In free space, therefore, transition is instantaneous. A change of frequency is equivalent to a change of position or location. Comment: an electron is believed to change its orbit instantly, without using time to do so. 10. Ultrasonic frequencies produced by electronic devices can act as a gravity screen, shield. A resting disk can cut off the gravity screen, shield. A resting disk can cut off the gravity pressure from any angle, and will then be thrown off into space by gravity itself. Or, 11, when the material of which the craft appears to be made has its vibratory rate raised to ultrasonic frequencies, it becomes invisible and intangible. 12. Then craft may remain in situation, translucent, transparent and invisible, tangible or intangible, or it may depart without being perceived. 13. Recurring to 6. Conversion to ultrasonic frequencies affects all parts of the body at the same instant, and the Aetherians experience no ill effects. They can travel as conscious living light waves, or in bodies resembling our own at another frequency. 14. From this point of view, item 13, it is possible to describe the arrow forms as the living bodies of etheric entities, as has been done. The ship and its crew alike become light waves or frequencies of the ether, while consciousness continues to abide in the entities, who may be unaware of physical changes in themselves. 15. According to their vibratory rates, the ether ships pass through each other and through other objects, and penetrate the depths of the sea and the solidity of Earth. The ultrasonic force field about them will also on occasion destroy aircraft and other objects, with effects resembling those of extremely violent collision. Mantle's plane, and his body, were almost certainly destroyed in this manner. Link. 16. As often pointed out by us heretofore, there is no crossing of space where transit of free space is in question, since the speed of light is then without limit, instantaneous, not requiring time. Light does not cross space. 17. It is known by experience that resting disks are often dangerous to touch, as told in item 6 up. It is possible that some persons may be less affected by supersonic frequencies than others. This may account for the selection of certain persons by the Aetherians. It is also possible that some such persons are now showing signs of amnesia and other physical and mental deterioration. 18. Recur to 16, last sentence, light, etc. There is a gravity time, lag in occupied space, but light and darkness are permanent conditions of the ethers, or frequencies of the ethers, not something that is going somewhere. 19. Persons abducted by the ether ships are treated by time. Measured doses of ultrasonic frequencies are usually landed on other planets and suffer amnesia with respect to their Earth lives. It is said that they are well treated. Analytical comment on these 19 points by Edward S. Schultz. This appears to more or less corroborate the saucer visit and Oride stories of Beth Erom and Dan Fry, in terms of physical body adventures, in full physical consciousness and within the Earth's gravitational and magnetic fields. 2. However, the preconditions in this automatically rule out the widely publicized saucer rides and planetary visits of another claimant who, by hotly insisting that he made the alleged rides into outer space in his physical body and consciousness, has been pulling the rug out from under himself in more ways than one. 3. This is very logical. However, in re to a space travel adventure and a saucer contact via a pre-conditioned consciousness, I recall the case cited in Uranus, of August, 1954, by Chibitt, wherein the visit into a saucer in flight was made by a woman in hypnotic trance. It remains for someone to report a case of saucer contact via astral projection. 4. Here, I wonder if such physical body reconditioning could also be done via hypnosis, via certain drugs or yoga practices. Note the parallel in fire, walking, done via certain yoga and HANA techniques. Some yogi have lately asserted that the effects of deadly atomic radiations could be entirely overcome or neutralized by such yoga practices. 5. This would seem to indicate that, even with the physical body protected by proper reconditioning, by-product source irradiation might have an effect on the etheric double or even higher vehicles, 66, of human consciousness. There have been several reports of such harmful side effects. 6. Since the terms ultrasonic and supersonic are not synonymous, their true, orthodox, meaning would seem to indicate that the reverse might be true. The possibility of such transposition, intranscription, etc., should be ruled out. If not, the terms probably have meanings outside the realm of atmospheric acoustics, as normally understood. 7. This could be especially true or more understandable if we consider the super, physical properties of the four invisible, to us, etheric, but still material, grades of matter, which normally make up our physical bodies as well as sources tuned into our physical octave of manifestation, etc. 8. Here we can recall theosophical and other literature concerned with the properties of our higher octave mental bodies and mental matter. By conversion from physical to mental matter, Aetherians and their craft can travel between galaxies, with a speed far, far beyond the speed of light and without the well, known relativistic drawback of infinite mass that physical matter is subject to at speeds equal to that of light. 9. In such free space, light quanta might partake of the properties of mental matter. In terms of the higher realities, all matter, on all octaves of manifestation is basically mental matter, that is, projected and sustained in the consciousness of the absolute. 10. I infer, in terms of ultrasonic frequencies in the atmosphere, but, more likely, in the aforementioned four states of etheric matter, which are just beyond the rarest gases but still physical. 11. Analogous to the way in which physical matter, made sufficiently radioactive, is transformed into invisible radiations, that is, a higher frequency of matter, as it were. 12. This means that Aetherians have the secret of tuning in on various octaves of matter, in and out of our range of perception, or halfway between. In the latter case, a saucer craft would appear to be semi-transparent, as in the reported cases of jellyfish appearances. 13. This is covered by and amplifies some of my previous comments, above. 14. By yogis are masters of such, frequency conversion. 67. Space travel. For authentic instances of this, read the fascinating and inspiring autobiography of a yogi, by P. Yogananda. 15. There is more than ample corroborative evidence of this throughout the realm of the more advanced saucer literature. 16. See comment 8 and 9, above. Mental octaves of frequency transcend all physical barriers and orthodox science notions of cosmic order. 17. This is undoubtedly true. The faculty of etheric vision, weak or missing in most individuals, might make it possible for some to see saucer phenomena quicker and easier than the majority. 18. Einstein postulated one such important effect of gravitational fields on light, and this was amply proved by direct, astronomical measurement. 19. Aetherians have undoubtedly been pollinating beautiful planets of remote galaxies in space for ages, with Adam's and Eve's samples of humanity. Thus, when trigger, happy war, mongers do happen to make this planet uninhabitable with an atom bomb war, the Aetherians may merely shrug, knowing that the teeming humanities they have planted on so many other spheres in space, are still busy carrying out the divine evolutionary plan. March 56. The 19 paragraphs previously appeared in our clips and quotes C, 11, and was also sent out as a brochure, number 1, 1, 6. We of course avoid lengthy reprints of our own material, but in this case the paragraphs are of great importance, and so too is the commentary on them by Associate CSS. This latter, however, will not be intelligible unless the paragraphs are at hand for easy reference. We have repeated literally scores of times, in various BSR publications, simplified statements of the etheric or 4D interpretation of the aeriforms, UFO. We will spare our readers further repetition here. If you have views for them, ask for our public information brochure. We have also explained many times the source from which the etheric interpretation was derived. This interpretation has stood the test of time. It was received by us in the fall of 1946, and practically all subsequent phenomena can be subsumed under it. It has been expanded and elaborated somewhat, but none of the basic statements have been abandoned or withdrawn. It is steadily gaining favor among investigators, especially in England, and will do so in this country whenever the word metaphysics comes to be properly used and understood. And let me again make plain that the etheric interpretation is not the invention of any BSR associate, nor is it cultist or religionistic, but rather a new factual impact of very ancient knowledge. ML from BSRA Round Robin of Mar, April 1956, Concepts of the Ether. One of the principal difficulties in trying to make the 4D or etheric interpretation of the aeriforms understandable, is the idea fixe that the ether, is an outmoded hypothesis. The explanation for this attitude, of course, lies in the whole history of the subject since the days of Lodge. But it would be easy to show, by numerous quotations, that the ether is as much reality and logical necessity today as are protons and electrons. Note the following brief example: the real electron, the part that acts, is the surrounding ether which is outside its geometric boundary, and the electron theory is the science of the properties of the ether. O.W. Richardson in Electron Theory of Matter. It may be found that the ether is, after all, what is fundamental, and that electrons and hydrogen nuclei are merely states of strain in the ether. Bertha and Russell, in ABC of Atoms. The foremost men of the age accept the ether, not as a vague dream but as a real entity. Tyndall, in Light and Electricity. It is possible that an electron is a kind of disturbance in the ether, most intense at one spot. It is equally possible that a hydrogen nucleus may be explained in a similar way. Russell, op. Sit. Eddington, as is well known, says emphatically that we cannot dispense with the ether, and that in trying to do so we have to attribute properties to the interspaces and represent them by a host of symbols. The phrase empty space is meaningless, and the old problem of actic in distance is still unconquered. Now referring to the explanation we favor, that there is no crossing of space measured in light years by the aeriforms, we refer again to Russell, who remarks that the process by which an electron changes its orbit is inexplicable, since it happens instantaneously contrary to all known physical laws. Perhaps, he says, there is no intervening space. In like manner, the ether ships emerge from one into another frequency, and thereby appear in a different place. There is no empty space to cross, and hence no time required for transit. Vibrasonics and conditions of space transit. 1. It is true that a few human beings, Earthians, have entered the disks and other aeriforms and have taken short rides in them. But no Earthian has traveled in an aeriform in free space, or has visited the Moon, Mars, or Venus or any other planet while in his normal physical body. 2. Such flight into free space or within the solar system may be possible in theory at least, provided the physical body be pre-conditioned by a time, measured dosage of high frequencies, ultra-sonic or vibrasonic. 3. Persons who have traveled for short distances in the neighborhood of the Earth have been exposed to the ultrasonic frequency field which surrounds the craft in flight, and may have been conditioned without their own knowledge. 4. The high frequencies referred to are generated by small electronic devices. Many mechanisms are employed by the Etherians, as by Earthians, merely as a matter of convenience but not from necessity. 5. True space flight, if achieved by a human even under the protection mentioned, would result in amnesia and serious physical disorders. The conditioning itself affects the bloodstream and the bone marrow. Further, the subconscious or unconscious mind of the human is deeply conditioned to all factors of Earth life, and will be unable to accept the immense frequency changes, even though the conscious self may give consent. 6. The ultrasonic frequencies convert the aeriform and the bodies of persons inside them, to the frequency of light waves. Under these conditions, the Aetherians retain full consciousness and full control of their ship, but no Earth person could survive them, except by such. 70. Preconditioning, as has been mentioned, and even so it is doubtful that he could return to normal Earth life. 7. Aetherian craft in free space, or where desired, travel at the speed of light waves, or greater. There is no limit to the speed of light in free space. This travel is a matter of conversion of frequency rates and can be controlled by mind energy and by the use of ultrasonic, electronic, apparatus. These frequencies can act as a gravity screen or shield 8. Conversion to ultrasonic frequencies affects all parts of the human body at the same instant, and the Aetherians experience no ill effects. They travel as conscious living light waves where the crossing of interstellar distances is concerned. More correctly, there is no transit of space, but only the change of frequency, which is equivalent to a change of location. 9. An aeriform at rest is surrounded by a supersonic field. When in flight, it produces an ultrasonic or vibrasonic field. These craft pass easily through each other and through other objects, and can penetrate the sea and the seeming solidity of the Earth, merely by converting their frequency rate as the situation may demand. As to the information contained in the foregoing paragraphs, I have only the following explanation to offer. A. It comes through the deep, transmediumship of a well-known medium, Mark Probert. The communicator in this instance is one Raymond Nakeley, an astronomer and physicist contemporary with Shakespeare. Identities can never be conclusively proven, but they are comparatively unimportant. All that matters is the content of the communication. B. I would not for a moment ask anyone to accept anything on the authority of supernormal sources. I do respectfully ask that useful information should not be disregarded because of personal prejudice and hasty generalizations concerning psychism or spiritism. C. For 5 to 10 hours a week, for 7-8 years, I listened to the Probert controls and talked with them. They claim to be, and appear to be, excarnate humans and fully integrated personalities. They have conducted themselves as honorable persons of goodwill. They are highly intelligent and widely informed, and have discussed a wide range of cultural and scientific subjects. They have had the respectful attention of scholars, scientists, and technicians, and have engaged in many discussions with them. D. It was these controls who gave us, in the fall of 1946, the first, 71, and best and only, interpretation of the aeriforms. They make no claim to omniscience, but warn us against such a claim from any source. E. They are not Aetherians, but normal humans from various astral levels who possess knowledge superior to our own, and desire to share it with us. Since the combined knowledge of our own time, our science, religion, and philosophy, has as yet no worthwhile interpretation of the phenomena of the aeriforms, it might conceivably be the part of wisdom, and common sense, at least to listen to these would-be friends from the other side, of course with all due reservations, suspicions, and face-saving provisos, and to put their offered knowledge to the test of study and practical application. I think our associates, for whom this journal is published, are aware that I hold no brief for spiritualism as a religious movement, and neither do the controls referred to, but I regard survival and communication as factual, as being inevitable and near, at hand social acceptances, and as opening up immense resources of knowledge when properly utilized. Beyond this, each to his own place on his own path, vox clamantis non sum, ml. How fast is fastest? If the speed of light is, as Einstein contended, a maximum and a constant for the universe, then an ether, ship or any other object which attained this speed would have no dimensions, but an infinite mass. If this is correct, it is obvious that any object or being attempting to cross interstellar spaces would be held to a speed much below that of light. Since such distances are computed in light years, the time required for such transit might run into centuries. The science fiction writers who love to dart about the stellar immensities with the joyous abandon of June bugs never openly admit that they are colliding with Professor Einstein's mathematics. In addition to the meteorites, bolides or what have you, the distance from our system to Arcturus, for example, is said to be about 32.6 light years, and a light year is about 182,000 times 60 times 60 times 24 times 365 miles. Give your Sunday supplementarian or even a third of the light speed and see how long his trip would take him. On behalf of the science fiction addicts, at any rate, some way must be found to wiggle out of this. But according to our various planetary visitors, who get here in no time at all, even from beyond the galaxies, this wiggle or wriggle is a simple matter. They just don't believe in Einstein, at least when he says that the speed of light is a maximum. They are aware that to be somewhere, in some given place, means to be tuned in on the frequencies of that place. When you tune in or tune out, you respond to a different environment, as any fool can plainly see, to quote Al Capps. Also, you are where your consciousness is, if you'll pardon the stale metaphysics. So, what these etheric people are really doing, is not discrediting Einstein, but making a masterly detour. They're not talking about motion at all, nor about transit of space. They're talking about being here and then being there. And this seems to be the place to mention that there is no world, wide or science, wide agreement about the speed of light being a maximum. There is, in fact, what seems to be good evidence that radiesthetic energy is far faster. We got into this little essay on account of what lately appeared in the Metaphysical Digest, Volume 3, Number 2, and here it is. The implications are vital. Once again, we have found that, contrary to expectations, we have an effect that influences light, but is not light in the ordinary scientific sense. The speed of radiesthetic energy assessed by comparative methods came out at some 200,000 times that of normal light does not. Radiesthetic energy, psychic energy, thought energy, all transcend space, time as we know it by purely physical methods. In his book called Space Travel, Harold Goodwin remarks, "The Einsteinian conclusions are not entirely a matter of pure theory. When atomic particles are accelerated in the cyclotron, they do gain mass. Wouldn't it be odd if one of them someday exceeded the speed of light?" Yes, indeed, Mr. Goodwin, but the world seems to be full of very odd happenings. Mr. Goodwin then goes on to remark that, the constancy of the speed of light has been challenged recently. Some researchers have found cyclic changes within 14 miles per second, and there seem to be daily variations. An European scientist who has studied the subject for over a quarter of a century, M. de Bray, says that the alleged constancy of light is unsupported by observation. Physicists generally do not accept this point of view. They feel that the variations are due to factors other than changes in the velocity of light itself. If there should be variations, however, a main prop to relativity becomes as dead as the ether, which most scientists also defended. Too bad that Mr. Goodwin had to drag in that alleged demise of the ether theory, since one could fill half this page with names of physicists who do not agree with him, and do agree with it. Subject, of course, to careful definition of the word ether and its derivatives. However, Mr. Goodwin appears to approve of the concept of a space warp, which is said to change the geometry of the gravitational fields between celestial bodies. This would change the coordinates, position, of an object, say, a spaceship, and apparently avoids the idea of motion or transit, at least in occupied space. So, it may be that the operations of etherian physicists will eventually be approved of by earthian scientists also, which will be a great relief to all concerned. I think I have said enough here, even in our school, boyish simplicity, to suggest that the concept of emergence, and of conversion of energy, frequencies in connection with the extraordinary phenomena of the aeroforms, is quite capable of serious scientific defense, even by earthian physicists. A few well-chosen words from Bertha and Russell may give food for meditation. It may be found that the ether is, after all, what is fundamental, and that electrons and hydrogen nuclei are merely states of strain in the ether. It is possible that an electron is a kind of disturbance in the ether, most intense at one spot. It is equally possible that a hydrogen nucleus may be explained in a similar way. Referring to the explanation we offer, that there is no crossing of space measured in light years by the aeroforms, Russell remarks that the process by which an electron changes its orbit is inexplicable since it happens instantaneously, contrary to all known physical laws. Perhaps, he says, there is no intervening space. In like manner, the ether ships emerge from one frequency into another, and thereby appear in a different place. There is no empty space to cross, and hence no time required for the transit. A brilliant brochure in support of the existence of the ether is The Ether and Its Vortices, by physicist Carl F. Kraft, 1955. As is well known, says emphatically that we cannot dispense with the ether, and that in trying to do so we have to attribute properties to the interspaces and represent them by a host of symbols. The phrase empty space is meaningless, and the old problem of action at a distance is still unconquered. As to space, which is bound up with time, it is not an objective entity at all, but a concept based on the idea of geometrical points. But it is used by writers in a half dozen senses and in no sense and nonsense, always without attempt at definition. Here, once again, discretion is the better part. The layman at large. The word density, as has repeatedly been pointed out, is used in several different ways by physicists. The present comment is narrowly restricted to the current text, book definition, that density is determined by the quantity of matter per unit volume. If the quantity of matter within a given volume is increased while a volume remains constant, the density, mass, weight, is said to be increased. Let us assume that we have, say, a cube of brick 10 centimeters on a side, and that this cube is completely enclosed in a tight container of the same exact interior dimensions. Let us suppose that means be supplied by application of intense heat to vaporize this brick cube while the container remains intact. The vaporized cube or its container, obviously contains the same amount of matter as did the cube while in its solid form, hence d will be the same, under our definition of d. But we are now dealing with a gas, with a release of kinetic energy, with a different vibratory rate, etc. If the vaporized substance were allowed to escape from its container, it would expand and be dissipated. But we are dealing with a constant volume, 1000 cubic centimeters. The vaporized cube is now invisible and intangible. But the wide atomic and molecular spaces within the solid brick allow plenty of one room, one or unoccupied space, so that, under pressure, a very large number of other vaporized cubes could be forced into the same cubic space. The density of the cube would then be greatly increased, more matter in the same overall volume. We would then have an invisible and intangible cube of far greater density than the original solid cube. If we imagine certain cohesive forces at work which would confine even the vaporized cubes to the original 1000 cubic centimeters volume, without any container, there would exist in space a cube of enormous density which our senses would not detect. Let us assume, what is indeed widely believed, that every so-called solid object has its etheric double or duplicate in etheric matter. It is also believed that such a double continues as an existent in its own right, even after the destruction of its solid counterpart, may even be discerned, ESP, and or detected by means employed in radiesthesia. In such case the double must persist by means of its own cohesive forces, whereas a thought form presumably depends on projected energy from some mental source. An inference of some importance is, that just as the vaporized cubes are still wholly material and also may be much more dense than, 76, the original cube, so the etheric doubles may also be material and of higher density than their original objects. The analogy is incomplete in that the vaporized cubes will not maintain the original volume unless held by a container. The object of the analogy is to make obvious that etheric, and other, objects may be of very high density while remaining invisible, intangible, and wholly material.